If you don't know how to do it, boy, you're out of luck. Push your partner out, then you hunch your back. Start a little movement in your sacroiliac. Wiggle like a snake, waddle like a duck. That's the way you do it when you do the hucklebuck.
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. That's right, local news and views about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Dearborn, Michigan, from Henry Ford Community College. That's right, we are WHFR, Henry Ford Community College Radio, right here with volunteer staff of more than 60 people, and except for yours truly and just a couple of others who are around part-time just to keep stirring the pot, as they say. So here we are today. It is June the 26th. Is that correct? Anybody know? Yes, okay. Because if it wasn't the right day, I'd have to go back home. So, and 2009, of course. And we have in the studio with us our news director, Susan Garrett, who's just getting her headphones on now. And say hello. Let's check the microphone. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Jay.
Hey.
Is it on?
Yeah, well, you're on. Boy, are you on.
I don't hear anything.
Okay, well, turn up your volume there.
Okay, I just want to make sure my headphones are on. Are
you're,
they on?
You're fantastic. Okay. I don't know if you can.
It's a beautiful day out here in Michigan today.
Yes, the Dearborn Farm Market Report, which we're doing now fairly regularly. It might be a tradition, I don't know, around 10:30 a.m. every Friday morning. And we, of course, thank Roger and the Big Band Show for accommodating our live on-the-spot report. Saw the mayor again, and he said, "You out here again?" Yeah, I said, "You're out here again, too." He had a grocery list, and so did I.
I'm still not hearing anything on my headphones here.
Well,
so
try a different input then.
Okay.
Okay. So as soon as...
okay.
As soon as she's ready with that. You sound...
Okay, that's better.
You hear better now?
He did something. What did you
do? Oh, Roger is a miracle worker.
Roger comes in here and fixes everything before
absolutely
he leaves.
Well, we have a number of course, local issues. Always, I've got about 20 different things circled in the local papers here from Dearborn Press and Dearborn Times Herald. But we have a special interview today, one of these national issues that do affect us locally that we need to pay attention to and follow. We have a special phone interview scheduled in just a moment with someone in Washington, D.C., and we'll let Susan host that. But what I wanted to do right now was actually play one of our commentaries from Jim Hightower, our friendly progressive radio podcaster, who has provided this just yesterday to us, a non-commercial announcement, by the way, from him about Republican health care reforms. That's right, Republican health care reforms. Here we go, and we'll be back with that special interview from Washington, D.C. Right after.
Thank you. We've heard a good deal about Democratic Party plans to reform America's corporatized, no-care healthcare system. But it's time we considered what Republican congressional leaders are offering. It's really pretty simple. Nothing. When it comes to altering the power of insurance giants to control our health care options, the Republican position can be expressed in one word. Hell no! The party's intransigence stems not only from its servility to corporate funders, but also from its blind faith in the mythical workings of the holy free market.
Yeah, I got it.
The Washington Times, a capital area mouthpiece for the GOP, summed up Republican opposition to Barack Obama's idea for a publicly run insurance option in this sentence. The government cannot possibly do for Americans what the marketplace can. Let's see. That would be the marketplace that presently excludes 47 million Americans from any coverage, that undercovers about twice that many, that has doubled our insurance premiums in the past 8 years, that costs us more for health care per capita than any other country, that limits our choice of doctors, that creates profits for insurers by aggressively denying doctor-prescribed treatments to sick people, that delivers a quality of care that ranks 37th in the world, just a notch above Slovenia, and that intentionally blocks consumers from access to cheaper medicines. Wow, I think Republicans might be right. Government couldn't possibly do all of that for the American people. Indeed, 3 out of 4 Americans say that this current system, controlled by insurance company profiteers, must be completely overhauled. Yet, all we're getting from the opposition party is head-in-the-sand subservience to the status quo. No wonder the GOP's job approval rating is lower than that of swine flu disease. This is Jim Hightower saying, aren't there any grassroots Republicans who can move their backward party forward?
Did you get through?
If we could pack our kids in bubble wrap, we'd do it. Because we love them, and we want to protect them. This is Lisa Edelstein with an easy way to protect your kids 3 times a day. Choose healthy foods. Research has shown that a vegetarian diet rich in fruits and vegetables can help protect our kids against obesity. It can even help keep them from developing heart disease or cancer when they grow up. To learn more, call 866-906-WELL or visit cancerproject.org. This message brought to you by the Cancer Project.
Studio. We'll put you right on as soon as you call. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
She has a cell phone number too.
Hi, this is Jay Kornanek back with you again. We have been unable to get in touch with our interviewee, and we will see what we can do to return that person in our special interview. Oh, well. I was interested
Sorry about that, Jay. I know she's busy. She's in Washington, D.C., and she's on the forefront of the battle for health care reform, and she's got quite a bit of media scheduled today, interviews and things like that. So that's the status.
Well, we'll see if we can get in touch. We just have a couple of more of our public service announcements to include. So let's get those out of the way, and we'll try one more time, and then we'll be back with a whole bunch of stories here on the new WHFR Journal. We want to try to get this interview in, and we're going to try an alternate number while these spots are playing. So hang in there, folks. This talks, next two spots, talks about our alternative energy degree here at the college and tuition rates. And that's always a money issue, very important. So more of the new WHFR Journal will get up and rolling after these two important announcements. Non-commercial, too.
Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. 2009 not only marks the 70th anniversary of Henry Ford Community College, but it also marks the beginning of a brand new degree program here at HFCC. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-8255. HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
Henry Ford Community College is a great way to get a valuable education at a lower cost. Visit hfcc.edu and compare for yourself. You'll see that the cost of 60 credit hours at Eastern Michigan University is $10,000 higher than the cost of 60 credit hours at Henry Ford Community College. It's $12,000 higher at Oakland University and $17,000 higher at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Remember, we offer a four-year tuition freeze guarantee, which assures you that today's tuition rates will be frozen for students who graduate from HFCC within 4 years. Henry Ford Community College is located near the corners of Ford and Evergreen Roads. Visit hfcc.edu for more details. The choice is clear. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
Well, WHFR listeners, I'm glad you tuned in today to the new WHFR Journal. I'm Susan Morrell, and I'm here with Jay Kornick. And we are trying to make contact with our special guest for today. Her name is Donna Smith, and she's going to talk to us about healthcare reform. She happens to be in Washington, D.C. at the moment. And she's talking with all the politicians and the groups there and trying to get something organized and passed for all of us. So we're hoping that she will call us back. So far, we haven't been able to make the contact.
I happen to be looking at the New York Times today, and since we brought up the healthcare issue, and Donna being the head, is it true, is it not true, of the California Nurses Association?
Well, she's actually, her official title is community organizer and legislative activist, and
right.
That's really what she does.
I was using small H on my head. okay. I knew there was a better title than that. Here's two things from New York Times just today, okay, and
yeah.
If you just allow me to share these.
Sure.
Again, Jim Hightower's comment that we heard is that the Republican plan is nothing at all. Republican plan to improve health care, nothing at all. Everything is fine, and of course, it's not fine. Comparing our system with that in the rest of the world, the number of people covered, the ease of, even if you're covered, actually getting good treatment, and being able to afford the drug cost and so on. So we do not have the best health care system in the world if you look at all the factors. And a lot of things need to be done. This is the story about the Obama situation. We wanted some details, certainly, and because they're still trying to work out what kind of plan.
Right.
Is the best plan.
What kind of plan?
They have taken off the table, unfortunately, universal health care, also known as single-payer health care. And that is too bad, because that is the answer that works for everybody that's got a better system than we do. And we can take the best of Canada and France and German systems and put them together, and we can have a better system that won't exploit the people that are sick. Talk about victimization. This system is the worst. It should be a nonprofit system. It should be run with government supervision so that everybody is treated fairly and equally. And if people need extra care, it's fine, just like in those other countries. You want a super doctor or a super procedure, you can pay for it.
Guess what, Jay? Japan and Taiwan both have a much more comprehensive system than we do here.
Well, so do our senators and our House of Representatives folks in Washington, D.C., because they have the, like, total health care, government-sponsored drugs and everything. So unless you can be elected a politician to Washington, D.C. from your state, you're not going to have that benefit. So I think it's we have to look at the top. Well, here's the story about the painful choices in paying for health care. But if this is really short-term limited thinking, because a better system will save us all money.
Of course.
It will save us all money in the long run if we can get the profit motive out of there and we get standards and regulation. It really will help on something this big. In fact, I heard Phil Donahue, former talk show host for many, many years, being interviewed by Sean Hannity, or being attacked by Sean Hannity on Hannity's show a couple nights ago. And he pointed out Hannity's against socialism, and government control. He said, well, what about the army, the military? Well, they're saving freedom. Well, Don't we want to save the lives of our own people in this country? Isn't that more important than so-called freedom in Afghanistan or Iraq or somewhere else? I think so.
Yes.
I think saving lives should start at home. Saving freedom should start at home. And I just don't understand that kind of point of view. Here are the ideas to cut spending or raise taxes. I mean, that's the only way you can pay for this stuff, they say. Number one, limit income tax deductions for high earners. Yeah, you know, after a certain point, which is about $70,000 a year, the income tax rate doesn't go up in this country. So if you want to keep a graduated system, which our federal income tax is kind of graduated. In other words, you pay a higher percent the more you make. But at about 70, 80,000, maybe it's 90,000 a year, that's it. You still pay the same percent.
Well, thank you so much, President Reagan and President Bush.
And get this, for health care and Social Security, after you pay so much in, you don't have to pay another penny.
Well, that's totally outrageous.
That's right. So the rich people, well, they pay in all their their contribution to the system, that net amount, and they're done in a month or so, you know, and they don't pay a penny more. So people say, well, how do we pay for Social Security? Just simply let the percentage, whatever it is, even if it's slightly graduated, going up as you're making more money, continue to be deducted from people's paychecks.
Exactly.
If they're making $2 billion, they pay the same percent, and there won't be any problem.
Yeah, it's a very simple formula. It's very simple.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I know we all would like to be a billionaire and not have to pay any taxes. That would be double cool.
Well, but, I mean, you know, the greed has gone over the top in this country, as we all surely must recognize at this point, with the disastrous economic situation that we're all in, that it's not, we're not finished with it. I mean, unfortunately, it's not over.
So if you change that that cutoff, okay, that of the tax rate that people pay in, that it only will affect 1.4% of households, and these are the richest people in the country, and it'll pay for everything. The second idea was tax employee health benefits. Taxing all employer-provided health benefits as income would raise more money. But opponents are unions and average person. You don't want to have to pay on those benefits, which right now you're not even seeing. I mean, your employer is paying for your health care in most businesses anyway, for full-time people. And that's a cost for them, but you don't have to pay income tax on that. So that's not a desirable way to pay for this, of course. Spend less on Medicare. They are thinking of maybe cutting back on some of the Medicare proposals that they had to help pay for insurance coverage for all. So those are the...
All right, what about this, Jay? Aren't we supposed to end the war in Iraq?
Well, that would pay for an awful lot, or the one in Afghanistan.
You know, those should be ended right away. We're sinking our money into, you know, in my opinion, a black hole.
Well, yeah, a few of us see a complete disconnect between why we're in Iraq and why we're in Afghanistan. And with Iraq, we've messed the place up so much, they almost can't survive without us. The best thing to do is to let them deal with their own issues. The same thing with Afghanistan, I think. But then again, we're talking about health care. Here's Paul Krugman today in the New York Times from this morning. And he, of course, is the Nobel Prize-winning economist last year.
Yeah.
He should know something about money.
Well, let's hope so.
And here's his comment. Of course, it does come from the New York Times, so you know it's going to be liberal point of view. But maybe effective, since obviously other economists worldwide have given him this prize, too. He says, when it comes to domestic policy, there are two Barack Obamas. On one side, there's Barack the policy wonk, whose command of the issues and the ability to expand those issues in plain English is a joy to behold. On the other side, there's Barack the post-partisan, who searches for common ground where none exist and whose negotiations with himself lead to policies that are far too weak. Both Baracks were on display this week, again, according to Paul Krugman. First, he says, Obama offered a crystal clear explanation of the case for health care reform and especially the case for a public option. Quote, if private insurers say that the marketplace provides the best quality health care, if they tell us that we're offering a good deal, he asked, then why is it that the government, which they say can't run anything, suddenly is going to drive them out of business? That's not logical, unquote. That's our president speaking. Krugman goes on, but when asked whether the public option was non-negotiable, he waffled. That evening, Rahm Emanuel, which is his policy advisor, or what is it, executive secretary, sort of?
Executive assistant.
Executive assistant to the President of the United States, met with Democratic senators and told them, well, it's not clear what he said. Initial reports had him declaring willingness to abandon the public option, but Senator Kent Conrad's staff later denied that. Still, the impression everyone got was of a White House all too eager to make concessions. The big question is whether health care is about to go the way of the stimulus bill. Remember that stimulus bill?
Well, okay. Which means what?
He continues. At the beginning of this year, Obama made an eloquent case for a strong economic stimulus, then delivered a proposal falling well short of what independent analysts considered necessary. So not liberal or conservative analysts, but independent analysts like Paul Krugman. Okay. The goal presumably was to attract bipartisan support, but in the event, Obama was able to pick up only 3 Senate Republicans by making a plan that was already too weak, even weaker. At the time, some of us warned about what might happen. If unemployment surpassed the administration's optimistic projections, Republicans wouldn't accept the need for more stimulus. Instead, they declare the whole economic policy a failure. And that's what exactly how it's playing out, Krugman says. With the employment rate now almost certain to pass 10%, and I think it's going to pass 14% in Michigan, if it hasn't already.
I'm sure it's okay. About 25%.
If you really count the people who would like to have jobs but aren't even trying,
yeah, let's count them
who've given up or moved out of the state, let's say. So it's 10% for the country right now. He says that there's overwhelming economic case for more stimulus. But as a political matter, it's going to be harder, not easier, to get that extra stimulus now that it would have now. Harder to get it now than it would have been to get the plan right in the first place. The point is that if you're making big policy changes, the final form of the policy has to be good enough to do the job, which brings us back to health care. It would be a crushing blow to progressive hopes if Obama doesn't succeed in getting some form of universal care through Congress. But even so, reform isn't worth having if you can only get it on terms so compromised that it's doomed to fail. Obama has to hang tough. Yes, the perfect is the enemy of the good, but so is the not good enough to work.
Well, my understanding of some of the opposition to the public option and to single-payer option is Kent Conrad and Max Baucus, they want a private, nonprofit option cooperative. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's just another word or terminology for a public option. What will end up to be in effect a public option, because there's only so many ways to go. I mean, it has to have all the qualities of the public option,
but I think it needs to be simple and comprehensive too. You can't just have the states, and this was one proposal that I understood, each state take on its own healthcare option and try to manage it. Massachusetts did that. And it just wasn't good enough, and they're going broke on that right now, although they think to expand that. But the point is, these are stopgap small fixes, and right. How is it fair in the United States of America that Massachusetts has universal health care, albeit not a good system? I mean, it could have been, but what they put in place, thanks to Mitt Romney, was not a good version of this, so they've got problem after problem with it. For example, George Bush, with the help, and shame on them, of the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, about 2 years ago, put in place a prescription drug payment system for seniors. And but it was so complicated, and it's so crazy that it really is not used to greatest effectiveness. And it doesn't pay for all the drugs. There's still co-pays of various amounts.
But that's Medicare Part D?
Yes, Medicare Part D, thank you. And even though I'm technically a senior and I'm technically retired, I don't think I technically qualify for it yet. I think it to be 65, perhaps. I'm not sure if there's that age thing, but that's when Medicare kicks in, and therefore Medicare Part D might kick in. But I found mail order, certified, approved, real doctor type mail order pharmacies that actually give me the one prescription I've on, and I've researched a couple of others, at less a cost than my copay on my Blue Cross Blue Shield right now. Imagine, they're giving me prescriptions with no insurance coverage at all that's less expensive. Now, if we had universal health care and medical, prescription service too for everybody, the government could bring the cost down to compete like that.
Right.
If a for-profit mail order company can give me the same drugs, quality drugs, as prescribed by my doctor, my local doctor, at less cost than a copay on a big-time HMO plan, you know, it really raises the question of what's going on in our medical system.
Yeah, but not only that, it's probably less money than what would be affordable under the Medicare Part D.
Yeah, I'll just have a caveat on that, in that I'm not taking any really expensive drugs. Okay, there are some drugs right. for cancer that are so expensive that even a mail-order pharmacy would have to charge you hundreds of dollars per prescription. It just happens that I discovered that the very common drugs, I don't have a health-threatening condition, are actually cheaper than paying copay in Blue Cross Blue Shield that I have right now. So the government can do this. Yes, in Canada, France, Germany, and Japan and so on.
Taiwan.
The overall income tax does go up for everybody,
right.
but they have progressive taxes, so the rich pay more in those countries too.
Right.
And they don't have any trouble doing that, you know. And so,
well, Jay, I mean, it's truly embarrassing that we are one of the wealthiest countries on the planet, and we still haven't mastered a health care plan for the population. I mean, it's embarrassing. And it's so reactionary thinking. If we don't get this done, it's just as Obama has said, it's going to be a terrible, terrible disaster right. for the entire country.
And for people that maybe haven't seen Michael Moore's last feature-length documentary called Sicko, which is a very serious film, has a couple of funny moments in it, that doesn't talk about all the uninsured. It talks about the people who think they're insured, who have health insurance now. Well, I don't have to worry. I'll keep the status quo. I've got health insurance. Oh, yeah? Try to use it. Try to use it at your favorite hospital now. Try to see how fast, if you have just one health-threatening disease on your record, how fast they're going to dump you off that health care plan.
Or just raise it to an unaffordable right. level.
Raise your deductibles or actually raise the rates that your employer is paying, and maybe he'll kick you off or fire you because he can't afford to keep you employed. Have to pay those insurance rates. These things wouldn't happen in a single-payer, government-sponsored universal health care plan, and we know that because of all the decades of history we have of all the great countries of the world that are not only affording it, but they're doing a good job. And I don't want my HMO coming between me and decent health care, free health care. If I need it, I want it to be there. So take a look at Sicko if you haven't rented that DVD. If you have health insurance now and you think, well, what I have is fine. I got care. I don't care. Those other people, have them get a job or something and pay for it. If you think you've got health insurance now and you think you're all set, ha, 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 go see Sicko. Look at the reality of how difficult it's going to be for you if you ever do get sick.
And I think that's what the California Nurses Association, that's one of the points that they're making, you know, with their organization.
Yeah.
If you go onto their website, it gives story after story of people who, just as you were explaining, had coverage but became, mm-hmm. you know, had catastrophic illnesses or accidents, and they found out that their insurance company was not going to cover them. And so it's a story of people going bankrupt and, you know, their lives being ruined with the lack of coverage. And it's a big issue in California, and this has been going on. It's a little more dramatic in California than it is even in Michigan.
And the state of California is broke. It's bankrupt. It may go belly up, and who knows who's going to bail it out. But still, the healthcare, universal health care in California is an issue that actually can help that situation, can help this. So a lot of people say, oh, we've already given so much stimulus money, we can't afford to do anything for health care. No, the payback is going to be fantastic on healthier people. Stress is reduced in a lot of people's lives because, oh, we can go to a doctor anytime we need to. Oh, we can get whatever drugs for free that they prescribe. that is going to so improve our country and the healthcare system if it's regulated properly. And you say, well, you know, private is better than government. Well, private hasn't worked, period. Private hasn't worked in this country. The profit motive hasn't worked in this country. They tried HMOs to consolidate and reduce costs. That hasn't worked either. So I think it's quite clear what we have is not working. It is not the best. It is more expensive than it needs to be, and that's quite clear. That's why we got to look into healthcare reform, and Republicans offer nothing. So I'm in favor of, like Krugman is, let's start at the top. Let's start with a simple, direct, obvious system. Give the option for people keeping their private insurance, fine, if they want it, but universal care for all.
Yes.
All ages, and we can do it. We can afford it because the payback. You say, oh, it's going to cost trillions. Yeah, but there's going to be trillions saved, too. Yeah, insurance is going to go up. Income tax will go up a little bit, but if we just give that nice continued curve to our income taxes, as I think is only fair to... Yes, it's fair to the rich people, you know. Otherwise, we should have a flat insurance rate for everybody. No, we have what we consider fair is graduated, but it stops at about $90,000. Well, most people, even in the middle class, with two salaries, two incomes might be above $90,000. And they are, unless you're a spendthrift, you know, they are ones that can pay for it. And it's only a few dollars more, believe it or not. All the other countries think it's no problem. We love our healthcare system. Canada voted a couple of years ago to, let's put more money. Let's tax ourselves more even.
The thing about those other systems, Jay, is that these systems have enabled them to reduce their costs and to be much more efficient, to deliver healthcare at a lower cost for the whole population.
Of course, there's problems with everything, but you want to look at the big picture. And so what can people do? Well, it is politics. You know, it does not hurt. I'm afraid there's not much that most of us can do except to send emails or call our congressman or our senator in Washington, D.C. and just continue reminding them. If you have to do it every day, don't just do it once, do it every day. Send a different message. So, email, if you have access to a computer, is free. Don't even need a postage stamp. Most of these representatives and senators that represent Michigan, they have local offices, so it's not even a toll phone call. If you want to make a phone call, and single payer, universal health care, and all these other improvements, even these tweaking and stuff, and the cost of it, short term, you know, projected cost, but the savings of always, so, for you know, look at the overall thing and do what you can individually. If you believe in this, if you don't, make your voice heard, and I hope you have some reasons. I hope you have, unlike the Republican Party, some alternative plan. That could be better.
Well, I think that we already have a couple of examples here in the United States of government-run healthcare programs in Medicare and in the Veterans Administration. And anybody who is part of those systems, I mean, they're very satisfied with their coverage options, and they're very relieved that they do have Medicare, that they do have a VA plan to cover them.
Well, let's move on to some local Dearborn issues. If we do get that phone call from our very busy head of the Nurses Associations in California, we will go to that directly when the call comes in, if there's time before the end of the show. I'm going to start with the pressing guide from last Sunday. A West Dearborn landowner developer is calling for suspension of paid parking, and his name may be familiar to you from this show and elsewhere, Hakeem Fakhouri. He cites parking and hesitant banks for problems of filling vacancies, especially in his own properties. He's a Dearborn native, and he's owner of course, Fakhouri Ventures. And he told the Press and Guide that he plans to file a lawsuit against the city next month, one that he hopes will force Dearborn to temporarily retire the controversial parking system he claims has driven potential business owners away from downtown West Dearborn. He says, I've lost four or five potential tenants because of paid parking. At the time, it may have been the right thing to do, which was actually 2 or 3 years ago, or was it, I think it was 3 years ago, when the citizens of Dearborn voted on it, because the city council and the mayor's office endorsed it. Okay, only two people on the city council were naysayers about that. So he's thinking of filing a suit against the city, claiming, I guess, I don't know what, the city is unfair, even the voice of the people in that ballot proposal is unfair to economic development. of his, at least, in West Dearborn. So things are heating up on that issue, and of course there's plenty of vacancies over there. It was very busy today. There's a lot of construction work in West Dearborn. When I was at the Farmers Market, Farmers and Artisans Market, there by the Bryant Library, a lot of changes, but paid parking is still in effect. Okay. I want to make a comment briefly about the Around the Capitol stories that are collected by Lena. It's K-H-Z-O-U-Z. Kuz, maybe? And Tim Powers, which is a great column where they pick up press releases from Congress people, Dingell's office, Senator Stabenow's office. For example, Congress passes cash for clunkers. That if you only hear the top headline here, you think, oh, I can get $4,000 towards my next car by trading in my old junker that's worth nothing.
They're going to give you $4,000 cash?
No.
Oh.
No. It's a voucher, first of all, towards the purchase of a qualified lease or a new, more fuel-efficient vehicle. But what I did, because Joanne Korchinska, our blues DJ, who comes in starting at 2 o'clock on Fridays, and she's interested in next car, and she said, oh, look at this. I clipped this other paper. Well, I did the research. And she's got not a new car, I won't mention, but it's quite old. Okay, it's more than 15 years old. And it doesn't qualify. It doesn't qualify.
Her car does not qualify?
Right.
Why? It's too old? Or what?
No, it's not old enough, and it happened to be a Ford, a compact Ford. I won't mention the brand.
It's not old enough?
1993 car.
Right. Oh, really?
But it got too good a gas economy. It was rated when it was new at about 18 to 22 miles to a gallon. And that's when I looked at all the details, and I don't want people to get their hopes up here, but, right. You know, talk to your dealer. If your dealer can sell you a car and he can find a way to get you that voucher, then God bless him. You know, I mean, let him do that. I mean, but because they will know but don't get your hopes up here, folks. If you read the details, and it's even said this, it doesn't say in the story here, because the story makes it look like, oh, Debbie Stabenow has given everybody $4,000 towards a new car just because they got an old car. No, it's mainly for old clunker pickup trucks.
Oh,
that get like 6 miles to a gallon or something like that. That's what it's for. But again, thank you, Senator. Why couldn't you do this for everybody? Oh, it'd be too expensive. Well, this bit and piece stuff that looks good in the press release and this story in the press guide, you know, oh, she did a great thing, you know, even if you're not thinking of getting a car. Well, thank you, Debbie. But in fact, it's only for a few people that own very old pickup trucks.
Well, that point was never mentioned. I've never heard that before.
Well, read the details. Read the details. Now, again, I suggest it even to Joanne, if she goes to her local dealer, whether it's Ford or whoever, of course the salespeople there want to get you qualified. They will do everything they can to find how your trade-in is going to qualify for this tax credit and a tax voucher, as it is, towards the price of a new car, if you can afford the new car. But don't get your hopes up. It's one of those political things where they pass it because it sounds good. The name of the bill sounds good. But the details are it's not going to help too many people at all.
So it really has to be a pickup?
An older pickup will qualify automatically, but other cars may. I'm just saying it better be at least 15 years old and maybe a big, you know, like an old, I don't want to put any brand on, but an old Cadillac or an old big Lincoln, you know, that actually did get only 5 or 10 miles to a gallon. If you had an economy car from even 93 or 94, 15 years ago, that got, you know, close to 18 or 20 miles to a gallon, that's didn't look like it was good enough the way I was reading the rules. And so look at the devil is in the details, as they say. Look at that. Also, from our friends at the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, they now have available a voter guide, which you can view or download from their website. That is LWVDDH. That's League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. So you got all those first letters, .org. Because they're a nonprofit, okay. There's 25 candidates to be on the ballot here in Dearborn for the city council election, and it's got to be narrowed down to the top 14 for the November ballot. So it's also possible Yes, by the end of June, and that's coming up, isn't it? Yes, end of June is next Tuesday.
Oh, my gosh, next week.
Yeah, what I'm saying, though, is they will have physical copies of the Voter's Guide from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, available at the Dearborn City Clerk's Office and at all Dearborn libraries. Okay, so you definitely, before you vote in the primary, and of course, the primary is August 4th, so when can you get your absentee ballot?
Well,
a month early.
A month early.
July 4th.
July 4th.
Well, that would be a Saturday, so July 6th or 7th. I think July 6th is the official.
Does it give you the list of candidates there?
Well, I'm not going to read them on the air. There's too
many. No, but I mean, are there new a lot of new names there that you don't recognize?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. As well as all of the incumbents are running again. Even Tefalski, who said he might run for mayor, he's in the running for city council again, as is Doug Thomas, who people thought he might retire or something like
that. Well, yeah, so. I mean, the last time Doug Thomas was in here, I think he told us he was going to be moving to Florida.
Yeah, as soon as his battle with Mayor Guido was over.
he loves it here so much.
He felt he had to be the noble opposition, as they call them in England, and the only voice on the council to speak the other side of the issues, that he felt that too many of the city council members just going along with whatever the mayor was saying. We assume they thought it through, too. They used their own brain on coming to that conclusion, but he felt he was sort of like the loyal opposition, but in a way, he still is.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately, I haven't really heard much from him.
Well, you should
lately because in the papers and everything, we haven't heard much from him.
You don't get that on your cable system, maybe in Dearborn Heights, the Dearborn Council.
Oh,
people, but he is still there. He and Tefalski, they've always had this somewhat similar feelings about things. And Tefalski is, of course, the head of the council, the president of the council. So he has a lot of power about agendas, and he was fighting paid parking, and he's still an advocate for views that are not heard from many of the other council members. So I think it's great to have an independent voice, at least one, on the council, if not a couple. And so we really recommend that as a beginning, folks, before you get, you know, you won't automatically get your absentee ballot, but before you request one from the city or go into the city clerk's office early, you can actually fill out the ballot right there. The city clerk's office before August 4th. And, you know, they give you the absentee ballot, you fill it out right there, and you hand it right back to them. So you can, anytime after the 6th of July, I'm sure that that's possible, but get the League of Women Voters overview. There's comments from all of the candidates in there for Dearborn City Council. And you can make a decision on that basis, but I always recommend holding back. If you have to have an absentee ballot for convenience sake, fine. Wait until you get more things in the mail. And I wanted to mention that where I live in Dearborn, which is on the east side of Dearborn, I just got a direct mailing promoting Suzanne Sereni, who is an incumbent for Dearborn City Council. It says, re-elect Suzanne Sereni, proven leadership, blah, 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 the usual thing. A friend our seniors can count on is one of her three reasons. And, of course, seniors mostly do absentee ballots, so I'm sure her people said, we got to make sure this mailing, which doesn't go out first class, it goes out of bulk mail, gets to people before July 6th, probably, before July 7th, when they can start doing this absentee thing. And so she's got the head start in getting her word up. But, of course, what words are in there? Only about 150 words total. And some nice pictures. She's standing there with John Dingell, but he stands with almost everybody who's elected at one point or another.
So when did you get that? When did you get that?
A couple days ago. Yeah. Started this week.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it may not be two-sided or fair because it does come from the Sereni supporters and or herself, no doubt, approved of it. But it's something, as well as the Press Guide, Times Herald, they haven't started in-depth interviews and commentaries on the candidates. And they might even give, and I hope they will, both of them, their own recommendations for the top choices for the council before the primary. And so get as much information as you can if you want to be a good citizen and make a wise decision. You can't do that by just, I just vote for everybody already in office. But what about all those other ideas? Some of them may have some good ideas. We will try to get interviews with some of these people, and certainly at, well, you know, as I see the date here, Dearborn Homecoming comes up 7th, 8th, and 9th. So this primary will already have happened.
Right.
So WHFR, we only have like a month, four shows before the primary. We can't possibly interview the 18 new candidates, the challengers.
Well, we'll have to make choices.
Well, we'll do what we can. We'll try to get a few in. We'll see how we can handle that. Normally, the primary comes after Dearborn Homecoming, but because Friday, the first Friday of the month, is not until the 7th of August, Homecoming starts on Friday, and so it is later than the primary. So we can't do 3 days of interviewing in the fun and the sun at Dearborn's Ford Field of any of these candidates.
So you see, folks, that even the media has to make choices.
Yeah. What we will do at Dearborn Homecoming, of course, is talk to the people that have won, the 14, because they still got to get the 14 in November down to 7. So it's just the field will be somewhat smaller. 11 people will fall to the wayside because they just won't be in the top 14. So no doubt those people that win in the primary will certainly be circulating at Homecoming, and we'll try to talk to as many of them as possible in Dearborn and the surrounding area too, whoever comes by. We'll invite all of them in. Okay, so that's the story there on the Voters Guide from League of Women Voters. You can get it from the City Clerk's Office or Dearborn Libraries starting, it says end of June, so maybe next Tuesday or Wednesday you can start going in and asking for that, or go to their website, League L Women Voters Dearborn, Dearborn Heights .org. Okay. All right. So what's been happening in the Wednesday editions? Do you see something?
Well, there's lots of stories here, but I, you know me, since I have the pet show on WHFR.fm, there's a beautiful picture of a woman with a horse and a bunny and everything, and of course I'm captivated by that. And what it is her name is Mona Ramoni, and she's been blind since birth. And she's looking for more independence. And although typically blind people use guide dogs to aid them through their daily tasks, she's a Muslim and she's not supposed to have a dog in her home. So she came across this topic about miniature horses that are being used as guide animals. And so somehow she has gotten a miniature horse. So she has a mini horse, and she has it at her desk, and she has, let's see, the guide horse is Callie, and Bailey the bunny is also on her desk. So she's proofreading a bailed translation of a college calculus book. I mean, how fantastic. Mm-hmm. So here she is working in her office with her guide horse and her bunny on her desk.
So she's not working in the stables. She's,
right.
She's got this horse indoors.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fantastic story, and I urge you to read that. That's in the Press and Guide.
There's got to be some practical disadvantages with having a horse indoors. Well, even if they're a somewhat miniature or dwarf horse, you know, like they're not trained to use litter boxes like the cats that we both
Well,
have,
we don't
right?
know that. So, we don't know that. They might be, you know, they you must could, have some type
well,
of training.
That would be amazing if a horse could be trained for that. probably it's like in Central Park where they make the horses go around with buckets, cloth buckets on their bottoms.
Well, it doesn't show a bucket. There's no bucket in the picture.
No, it doesn't
but
show that. No,
this is the Press and Guide, the front page from Wednesday, June 24th. So if you want to read about the miniature horse being used by this lovely blind woman here and the bunny and everything, it's a great human interest story, as they say.
Yes. And of course, Susan Morrell's Pet Lover's Lane is presented alternate months here on Saturday mornings.
Yes.
Second Saturday, but alternate months. So it's not coming up in July.
In August, it will be our next show.
The next edition will be August.
And then you'll hear from us then. But Jay and I are kitty cat lovers. We're cat people.
Yeah, well, if you can't get along with the animal world, especially domesticated animals, you know, which there's many advantages to having a pet and treating it well, and a lot of things that kids can learn, again, if they're taught responsibility at all. It's a wonderful thing to have a pet, and You know, can't say more about that. And it's a step. You know, maybe we'll be better to the people around us if we learn how to be better to our pets. Maybe, you know, there's some trade-off there, I would hope. Or to our natural environment. You know, well, okay. I'd like to go on with...
Okay, we could go on with that, but anyway.
Something else on the front page here. I'm grabbing the paper out of her hands, the pressing guide. Bye-bye, Dearborn City Building and Safety Department. A lot of people have complained about Dearborn's Building and Safety Department. Every one of former Mayor Guido's State of the City addresses have said how we need reform, we need change, and as far as I could tell, nothing ever happened. Well, the department is being split into three, reassigned, reorganized. That was approved last year by Dearborn City Council in May 2008. And it's actually going to happen when the department opens for business or departments on July 1st. There'll be three separate departments handling that same business, and there will be none called the Building and Safety Department. What are the departments, you say? Okay, one is the Economic and Community Development Department, talking about future growth and new development and. You know, incorporating building and safety issues like permits and approval for new kinds of zoning or whatever might be needed. The Department of Public Works, which I thought we already had, but that's going to be the third part that's taking on some of the responsibilities of building and safety. Public Works, you know, is water and sewage and trash pickup and so on, those issues. And the third is a newly created Residential Services Department, which will oversee the city's Neighborhood Stabilization Program. And so that's a government program that was approved in May 2008 that has allowed the city to purchase marginal or underdeveloped foreclosed homes with the intention of reusing the property and or rebuilding. And so that they needed a whole separate department to work on that because it's a government funding thing and you got to have people there working full time to keep it going. So that's that was Mayor O'Reilly who said he was going to do this, and he has done it, and it is referred to as a massive reorganization that eliminates building and safety forever, and now we can't easily swear at building and safety if we don't like how they, you know, looked at our property or didn't approve a permit or something. We'll have to talk to one of these three other departments, Economic Community Development, Department of Public Works. And so I don't know, if you're going to sell a house, who do you call here? Public Works? I guess it would have to be Public Works. I'm going to see if it says anything on the continuation of the story. Remember, the devil is in the details, or depending on your point of view, God is in the details. Whoops, I'm on the horse page. That's the wrong page. More horse. That little horse is just barely bigger than this other woman's dog here.
Yeah, it's a miniature horse. It's
definitely miniature. Yeah. Okay. Okay. New, that's where it is. Okay. Yeah, Department of Public Works will be a resource for residents dealing with property maintenance issues and will enforce code violations that affect neighborhoods. It'll also become the administrative liaison with the City Beautiful Commission. Okay, so neighborhood stabilization will also deal with the neighborhood associations that exist. Okay. That's all we know. So call City Hall if you want to find out the right department to refer some building or development issue to in the city. But maybe now, and of course, you know, there's been a couple of arrests by the FBI from the Building and Safety Department. You realize that, Susan.
Okay.
We
talked about that long ago. Long ago, but I didn't know if they officially went through.
And that's because certain people, not the department as corrupt as a group, but some people were doing bribes and kickbacks and, you know, with all the building regulations and so on. And those arrests have been made, and these people are being prosecuted and so on.
Although, so they were Dearborn employees, City of Dearborn?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my gosh, that's terrible.
Right, in both cases. And the FBI actually did the investigation, I think, for the sake of fairness. I mean, you know, if something's wrong in the city, something illegal is going on in the city, you can't really have the city police investigate because there's a conflict of interest. You know, the city wants to protect itself, so maybe they don't work as hard as the FBI. And that's a just the fair thing to do, I think, to keep it all as objective as possible. And I think I'd have to say from a lot of people that the Building and Safety Department was too big, and obviously from those couple of prosecutions, that's a sign anyway, maybe not a direct indication, that the system was so well established, even if it was partly efficient, that it was easily corrupted or had been corrupted. And so one way to do it is to just break it apart, you know, break it down and recreate these responsibilities under new leaders. And we'll see how that works out. But a lot of us in Dearborn, and I've been resident since 79, hard to believe, but 30 years I've lived here, which is, I know it's only a newbie status for a lot of people as they see Dearborn residents, but they've been a problem. They've been a problem in this community for years. As I said, Mayor Guido, even for years, oh, it's a priority to do something about building and safety. And I know, and I know. And then nothing could get done. So Mayor O'Reilly at least has done something. We'll see how this helps.
Yeah. Mayor O'Reilly is very on top of things, and he's always looking to be ahead of the curve. And I think he is ahead of the curve.
I think especially with the FBI prosecutions, time had come for something to be done, you know. So anyway, interesting, and we can't feature this, but the healthcare issues, there's the usual Republican-Democrat response from two local leaders of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. That's on the opinion page of the Dearborn Press and Guide from this Wednesday, June 24th. And so we suggest that you read through there and see what they say. I don't believe that either one of them are talking about single-payer health care, though, universal coverage for all, although Morris Goodman, the Democrats' response, talks about maybe that's something we could get to someday.
Well, unfortunately, our guest has not called us back today to talk about the health care reform efforts in Washington on Capitol Hill, but, you know, she is very busy, and we do apologize for that, but
We've given our opinions, and we present to you Connolly's and Goodman's for you to read yourself from the Dearborn Press and Guide. And you heard Paul Krugman find it. You didn't get into the further back pages of the Press and Guide here. The Dearborn Animal Shelter has gone live with a kitty cam.
Right, kitty and you were telling me about that.
Right, the shelter hopes to increase adoption by providing live web camera coverage, so you can see the kitties, at least, that are available by this link from their website, which is, where the heck is it here? Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter.org or something, I bet. You know, I don't see the website address. Isn't that terrible? That is terrible.
Could I see it, Jay?
No.
Oh, he won't give me the paper.
Here it is. Okay. Online. You can see the cats in action at www.dearbornanimals.org. So you don't have to put friends or Dearborn Shelter. It's dearbornanimals.org. And then you can click on the best little cat house in town. Well, we have a phone call coming in. Let me see who that might be.
Oh.
Hi, it's WHFR. Jay speaking. Yes, Donna.
Oh.
We're kind of out of time for this show, Donna. We can give you 3 minutes. Okay, let's do that. No, don't worry about that. We've been reading some other things, some other summaries about the healthcare issue today. So let me put you on right now. Just hang on, okay? Right.
Believe it or not, folks, our guest just called in, and we've got a few minutes left on the show. So,
we should be on the air with Donna Smith from California.
Hi there. Greetings, and I'm so glad to be speaking to people in Michigan. How are you today?
Well very good, Donna, and thank you for joining us here on WHFR 89.3 in your FM dial. I just want to introduce Donna to our audience, and she is a community organizer and legislative activist, and she is employed by the California Nurses Association. And Donna happens to be in Washington, D.C. at the moment on the forefront of the battle for health care reform. And we've just got to go right to it, Donna. And what is this current status?
Oh, thank you for asking. It's just such a busy time, and I wish I had more time with you right now and hope I can come back another time. But
yes.
The status, the status right at the moment really is quite frenetic in terms of the Senate has a couple of actions going on within the Senate Finance Committee, where you all may be following what Senator Max Baucus and Senator Grassley are up to.
Yes.
And where they're dealing primarily with issues of financing some kind of reform. And then the Senate Health Committee, Senator Kennedy's committee, which is really being overseen by Senator Dodd right now, has its own energy going. Then in the House side, we have what's called a tri-committee bill that's coming forward out of three separate committees that are trying to come up with some kind of coordinated effort in the House that will also call for what they term right now a robust public option, none of which we really know exactly what that word robust mean, but it sure sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Yes.
So
sounds healthy.
No, doesn't sound necessarily healthy, but well, you know, the word robust, I suppose, will get a few people interested. So there's a lot going on. We've also had some interesting single-payer activity, and for those of, I know your listeners already know what that is, but that's certainly the system that the California nurses advocate as a single-payer system, and publicly funded, privately delivered. We all get to choose our own docs, but we all pay into one pool and get rid of all the waste and all the profit taking out of healthcare.
So what is the what do you see as the time frame for things falling into place?
Well, certainly what the president wants to see, he has said very clearly, is he wants to see a bill to him before the August recess, if at all possible, and have something signed before Thanksgiving. I think that's a very aggressive kind of prospect at this point. We certainly have some of the most influencing minds in the nation saying that they're not sure that this Congress can get to that point of compromise, at least with something meaningful that will make the system better for us all. You know, we hear a lot about the insurance companies being enriched, and I like to call it kind of a monstrosity plan that's going to give them all a chunk of our business, but still leave a lot of us really open to some financial ruin and to not necessarily accessing the care we need.
But what do you think the chances are for the public care option?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I'd say that there's a good chunk of Congress that really wants to see that happen, and some people fighting very hard, Congressman Kucinich among them, and Congressman Conyers certainly among them, and some other really good people. But there's also some very powerful old scare tactics going on to fight against it. So,
Donna, this is Jay Koronik again. Yeah. I just have to say, this is WHFR Dearborn. What we're going to continue doing, since you are on the phone, just give you a couple more minutes. Our blues DJ, or our blues show, is going to start in just a moment. I know that Joanne Kay is coming from a medical appointment, and we know about those doctor's offices,
yeah,
don't we? And so as soon as she